plate a potential nugget.
And back to the three pillars of a good career you spoke about, Sally, one of them being connections. And in the book, you talk about the distinction between building great relationships and leveraging relationships. And you say that women often build great relationships, but sometimes don't do enough to leverage them. What's your advice, again, for women to do this without coming across as transactional?
Yeah, I think that it's very important not to do this in a transactional way. It's really important to leverage people in your career and to be a point of leverage for other people. It's that creates that give and take around which successful careers are built, and is a key part of organizations really being able to do things too, is people leveraging one another's skills, resources, connections, and ideas. So you want to, that needs to be something that you're committed to doing. What's interesting, there are a couple of things that are interesting. One is that, because I started doing some research on, you know, what are the most effective ways to engage and leverage other people to help you and to be a resource for them. What is least effective is a real quid pro quo approach, which was surprising to me. So what's least effective is saying, hey, I'm going to help you. I really need help with getting some connections in this field. And if you help me, then I will be glad to do, you know, get you connections in this field or make a recommendation to you. So when you try to frame it as a quid pro quo, as, well, you do this for me, I'll do that for you, it takes away some of the joy that the other person can have in actually helping you. And research demonstrates that the number one reason people help other people is because it makes them feel better about themselves. So when you frame it as a quid pro quo, you take away that ability for the other person who's helping you to feel better about themselves. The other thing is, when you want to engage somebody to help you with something, say it's some connections you need, or say it's access to resources, or whatever it is, you want to be as specific as you can about the request. Sometimes if we're inexperienced at doing it or we feel uncomfortable, we kind of fudge it and say, hey, you know, I'm kind of wondering, I'm wondering if you might be able to give me a little bit of help on, and then you say something kind of vague. The more specific you are, the more clear you are, the more helpful they will be. The more helpful they can be, you know, I could really help her with that, as opposed to just trying to get them to sort of read your mind. So you want to be specific. It's also good to give a time frame so the person doesn't feel like, well, if I help her on this, does it mean I'm going to be helping her with that for the rest of my life? You know, really wondering if you could help in this time frame me, you know, get access to whatever it is. That's a very good thing to do. And to approach it really as a win-win. I think that one thing I've noticed, well, there are a lot of very successful women who are superb leveragers. Men who are successful are virtually always superb at leveraging and engaging other people. And the ones who are most effective, they really do tend to see it as a win-win. They do tend to see, you know, I'm asking you to do this for me. I'm asking you to be a resource for me in this way. And they really do see, now we have a relationship where I can be a resource for you, and that's going to be to your advantage as well. So it's partly, I think of it as seeing yourself as a player, as somebody who can be instrumental in helping other people build their careers as well. That's what makes you comfortable doing.
And when you look at this, I was trying to remember Adam Grant's research around givers, takers, and matchers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see a difference in distribution for men and women in terms of how they distribute into the three categories? Or do you see that as largely gender agnostic?
I have not really thought of that. I think it's a very interesting question. I think that the goal is that we all want to be more effective matchers, in Grant's language. That is not someone who's always giving in the hope that someday someone will give back to us, which is often futile if we're unclear about what we need or want, or even the fact that we do want something. And then, you know, I don't think anybody really benefits over the long run by being a taker. But we want to be a matcher. That is, we want to sort of match what our asks and what our offers are to the colleagues and peers that we build and leverage and help ourselves along the way. So I think that's really what we're aiming at. We're all aiming at a better, you know, so a sort of more skillful approach to being matchers.
Sally's insight reminds me of something I learned from Herminia Ibarra, one of the earlier guests of the show. She speaks about three kinds of networks: operational, personal, and strategic. Herminia says that operational networks are what get the job done today. Personal networks have a certain emotional quality to them and consist of relatives, friends, and so on. But she goes on to say that strategic networks are the ones that provide breakthroughs and advance careers. And very often, we're not intentional about these networks, either because we don't make the time or we aren't deliberate enough.
One example that struck my eye a couple years ago, so one that's first coming to my mind, is when Beth Comstock was still at GE as chief marketing officer. She felt that she was oftentimes much more connected to the outside world than most people in operational jobs at GE, which tended to be more internally focused. And so she felt, even though it wasn't part of the job description, that part of what she could do is bring the outside in for those people. And the example that I loved is she was at a book talk in Silicon Valley for the launch of The Lean Startup by Eric Ries about fast prototyping, which originally was a book written for startups. How do you go to scale quickly, minimum viable prototype? But she just thought, you know, aha, we're taking too long in our product development. Our turbines are taking too long to develop. And I bet we could use some of these ideas in a more classic manufacturing context. Let me make the connections. And she did. And a big part of GE Aviation then got trained on these methods to kind of make the process more agile. So that for me is a great example of how you can be strategic. You've got access to something others don't. And so you see the idea here and the need there, and you bring them together.
Over the last few years, I've started realizing the value of the power of weak ties, going back to the 1973 study by Mark Granovetter. We often think that opportunities come from our strong ties, but I've personally noticed that they often come from our weak links. I heard somebody explain elegantly why this phenomenon might be at play. That's possibly because the strong ties are possibly close to our ecosystems, and we see similar opportunities as them. So the net add to the world of possibilities is limited. But when it comes to weak ties, the Venn diagram of the world of opportunities as they see and what we see has lesser overlap, leading to a greater surface area of opportunities, if that makes sense. As Sally says, I guess it's a combination of building the right kinds of relationships and establishing the right tonality of mutual value add in these connections. Thank you for listening. If this topic is of interest, you might like the curated playlist on women leadership that has insights from several women leaders on what it takes to unlock the potential of women at the workplace. Please go to playtopotential.com, go to the tab Curated Playlists, and then look up Women Leadership.